Thanks for settling in. Dave Benko from Dielectric got his start in 1995 when he joined ITS Corporation making exciter retrofits for Klystron tube transmitters. Dave is Dielectric's national sales manager for the western half of the U.S. He has over 25 years of experience in terrestrial broadcasting encompassing radio, TV, mobile television, wireless cable, and wireless broadband. Dave has been an active participant in ATSC activities. He previously served as the VP of Sales at Electronics Research Inc., ERI, and has had positions at Gates Air, Rodian Shores, and Xera. Dave graduated from Penn State with an EE degree and earned his MBA from Waynesboro College. He is a member of the Association of Federal Communications Consulting Engineers and IEEE. Outside of work, Dave and his wife of 31 years have 5 kids, 2 grandkids, and 2 dogs. Dave's hobbies include working on cars and attending sports events. His teams are the Pittsburgh Pirates, Steelers, and Penguins, and his alma mater, the Penn State Nittany Lions. Dave also likes listening to old-time radio detective shows like Johnny Dollar and Sherlock Holmes. For family trips, Dave's favorite destination is the Outer Banks of North Carolina, which I would second. There's beautiful sandy beaches and gorgeous lighthouses there. Fun fact, Dave is known for keeping a clean car, so don't try to litter if you're riding with Dave. Please welcome Dave Benko.
Thank you. Now, I guess, Vicki, I didn't get instructions here. Is this how I control this presentation? Okay. Good morning. Like Vicki said, I do like to keep a clean car. Don't eat in my car is the rule. Having 5 kids, it could get out of control, so we needed to keep that under control. Today we're going to talk a little bit about FM antenna technology and what we've been up to at Dielectric in this area. Maybe. Oh, the down button. Here we go. Thank you. At Dielectric, we are at the core an RF company. So, you know, the products that we have are all RF related. You might recognize some of the brand names, RCA and Harris. Those are products that we've acquired over the years and have become part of the Dielectric family, both in the TV world and on the FM side. In 2017, of course, we ramped up for the television repack, during which time we built about 1,200 antennas, at the same time keeping up with our FM, international, and custom businesses on the RF side. So quite a challenge for us during that period. After the repack, we've noticed the TV business continues to be pretty strong. But we saw that our FM business was a little bit slow. So last year we had a partnership that we put together with SCMS to help us go to market in FM, and now the FM part of our business is the fastest growing part of Dielectric. I think we're over 3x to this point this year what we did last year in FM. So good things are happening from Dielectric on the FM side. Today we're going to talk about new technology that we've developed in these three products. The first is the DCPC, which is a panel-type antenna. It's been designed to reduce both the cost and the number of parts. You'll see that as a theme throughout this presentation as we do redesigns. We look to reduce the number of parts because the reliability goes up the fewer parts you have, right? So we'll talk about DCPC first, then we'll talk about the Ringmaster product, which basically maximizes the performance out of our existing ring-style antenna, which is a side-mounted antenna, and we'll talk about how we achieve both broadband and low RFR configurations with the DC or with the Ringmaster. Finally, we'll talk about the Ring 360, which is a top-mounted true omni FM antenna, which is sort of a challenge for a long time in our industry to find something that meets those requirements. So we'll talk about how we did that without having to use a panel array for that. So Let's get started with the DC-PC. Conceptually, if you think about a panel antenna for FM, it's a circularly polarized device, and you've got essentially a panel with a set of dipoles on it. And there's three ways kind of to do this traditional dipole design. You can have what we call the quad dipole panel, which you see on the left, where there's four dipoles there arranged on the panel. And remember what I said about reducing parts count, right? This is a parts-intensive solution. You can do the horizontal, vertical dipoles either at 90 degrees or 45 degrees orientation, and that reduces the parts count a little bit if you feed each pair of dipoles together. But you still have either two or four inputs per panel. You've got multiple Balun tubes here. This is currently what our product line looks like. This is a dark room at night. while I'm up here with no screen, I'll just tell you about the darkest place I've ever been. Has anybody ever been in a coal mine before? Okay, yeah, when I was younger, my dad worked in the coal mine, and he said, would you like to come to work with me one day? And we did a tour, went down in the coal mine, turned your cap lamp off, and it was the darkest place I'd ever been. So that's what that slide reminded me of. And it, okay. Nope. It's Murphy's Law, isn't it? What can go wrong will. My favorite is Basil Rathbone as Sherlock Holmes and Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson. So, anybody else familiar with that? Yeah. Oh, you like Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman as the. That's just Sherlock, though. That's not Sherlock Holmes. All right, let's try it. Oh, I heard a beep from up here. Maybe that's, there we go. All right. So I was talking about those different panel arrangements. And if you look here on the top, if you have that quad dipole panel, so I want you to picture in your mind just a single layer, three around panel antenna. And on the right, you'll see what the feed system looks like for that antenna, right? So you've got three panels around. Each panel has four dipoles on it. So you've got to feed 12 different dipoles. So you need a two-way power divider, two six-way power dividers, and those feed lines have to be phased with each other, right, to achieve the circular polarization. So again, going back to that idea of a lot of parts means reliability issues, right? If you do the horizontal vertical dipoles and feed them in pairs, you can simplify that feed system to the bottom right-hand side of this slide, where you only need a six-way power divider and six feed lines. So it does get a little bit better, but each panel has two inputs, and there's still a requirement to phase the lines here. So our conceptual idea that the engineering team had was, what if we could make a broadband panel that only has a single input and only has one Balun tube, right? That would be perfect, wouldn't it? Because the feed system for that would look like what you see here at the bottom. So you see how much simpler it is. So the first thing we decided to explore was really what's the impedance of a dipole? And when we look at both the real part and the imaginary part, we determined that if you take a dipole that's 0.52 lambda, it will radiate 90 degrees ahead of a dipole that is 0.43 lambda. So kind of interesting there. If you make an antenna that uses two different sizes of dipole, and those sizes correspond with the 0.52 and the 0.43, you can create dipoles that radiate 90 degrees out of phase with each other. And you can feed them all at the same time with a single input, a single Balun tube, and still get a circular polarization result. Okay, but you see here across the band, that that HV ratio is not consistent across the band. So step one was, let's find a way to feed all the dipoles the same way. But we still have an HV ratio problem across the band, and we also have a narrow band problem. This is only about a 3 megahertz wide solution, so we've got to do some more engineering to solve that problem. So one of the ways you can increase the bandwidth is to increase the diameter of the dipole. So if you think about it this way, the thicker the dipole elements are, the lower the Q is, and the wider the bandwidth is. So we went to a wider dipole, and we went from this V-shaped response to this W-shaped response, if you think of it that way. And you can see now we're covering more of the band, so the band is getting wider for that antenna, but we're still not where we want to be. Another technique we can use to increase the bandwidth is to add a shorting stub inside one of the elements of the antenna. And what that does is broadens the usable bandwidth even further. So we went from that W shape to this shape here. The bandwidth is now getting wider, and we can use that slug in the right spot to improve that performance, but still not quite there yet. Finally, when we add this parasitic element, which is just a little ring-shaped element that is not driven. So this is a passive element that we added to the antenna, but it does couple electromagnetically with the dipoles. So what that does is serves to increase the bandwidth even further. So now we went from that W shape, and you can see now we can cover the entire band across FM. So we've solved the bandwidth problem for this element. This technique is pretty common in like log periodic and Yagi style antennas. So, you know, we're just applying different RF techniques to this unique FM problem. So the first thing we did, just to recap, we adjusted the dipole diameter from 1 inch to 3 inch. That took us to the point there in the lower left. Then we added the shorting stub, which even further improved the impedance match across the band, and then added this passive cone or disc, this element that's not driven there in the middle of the DC-PC panel to achieve full bandwidth across the FM band. So the ratio now, the HV ratio across the band is the next hurdle to come across. And that's really, it's generated by the differential length between those two dipoles. Remember the 0.52 and the 0.43 length? So at the center of the band, it looks pretty good at 98 megahertz, right? That ratio there is just about one. But it drops off as you go towards the end of the band. At the bottom end, it's about 0.67, and up at 108, it's 0.45. So this is a problem that has to be solved, right? No one wants to be in a master antenna and find out, well, you're at the end of the band, so you get a little bit less than everyone else, right? So next thing on the list for our engineering team was to solve that. And the way that they did it is kind of a unique solution here. So picture, you know, two bays. But what you do is you rotate, basically exchange the long dipoles for the short dipoles and the short dipoles for the long dipoles on the panel below. So now, you know, it works as long as you've got a two-layer antenna at least, right? So when you rotate those dipoles, look at the performance now, the H to V ratio across the band at 88, 98, and 108 megahertz. The problem is solved. And if you look at a full antenna, this is what a DC-PC panel would look like there on the left, and this is on the right, a what I'll call a traditional or CBR pattern. So you can see it might actually be a little bit better in terms of performance than our existing CBR, but remember, we've now only got one input per panel. We've only got one Balun tube there. So the final hurdle is, okay, we've got a solution that electrically performs very well in the computer, but when you hit it with real power, what happens, right? And for a master antenna, you know, sometimes power is everything. So the limiting factor on traditional designs is the Balun tube or the feed strap inside there. And you know, those are prone to electrical breakdown. What we did for the DCPC is we basically put, you know, a big 6-inch Balun tube in the middle of this DCPC antenna, and we're able to not have to compromise any of our safety factors, whether it's voltage or power safety factors, to have the performance out of DCPC that's similar to our traditional dielectric CBR panel antenna. So this is a huge improvement and allows us to reduce that parts count, again, increasing the reliability of the antenna once it's installed, and simplifying installation as well. So the conclusion is that the new DCPC panel will exhibit greater reliability probably than we've ever had before in an FM panel antenna. You'll have fewer power dividers, feed tubes, Balun tubes. All of the weaknesses have been reduced, and the strengths still remain for this panel style antenna. So the side benefit of that for you and for us is the cost goes down as well. So, you know, this effort was really a worthwhile one for us because we achieved that the holy grail for engineers of better performance and lower cost, right? So the DCPC antenna, you know, is the new solution for us on panel antennas. Now, next we're going to talk about Ringmaster. And, you know, the Ringmaster name, it should be pretty simple, right? When you think about a master antenna comprised of ring-style elements, you come up with Ringmaster, right? So that's kind of where that comes from. I guess I've had some people ask me that, and they picture the guy in the top hat at the circus. You know, that's something different, right? Historically, you know, ring-style antennas are side-mount solutions. And they come in sort of three flavors. There are a couple more, but, you know, the three standard types, the three questions that, you know, you ask when you're talking about a ring-style antenna is, do you want a full-wave solution? Do you want a half-wave solution? Or are you looking for a low RFR or N-1 over N solution? Usually that's dictated by the amount of space you have available on the tower. Right? So, you know, in my discussions with customers, we'll talk about how much space do you have on the tower? Well, I've got enough room for, let's say, an 8-bay full-wave spaced antenna, right? So in that space, we could do roughly 16-bay half-wave, right? Or we could do a 9-bay N-1 over N antenna that preserves the gain of the bigger antenna but gives you the low RFR performance of the half-wave spaced antenna. So those are where those three arrangements come from, and we're going to talk about Ringmaster and how it's a different arrangement that provides some other benefits. So the full-wave spaced antenna, when you think about why would I do a full-wave spaced antenna, typically here you're looking at a narrow band solution, right? So the bandwidth is a little bit less than in the other solutions, and here's why. Essentially, the bandwidth of an FM antenna is related to the volume of the antenna. So you can think of this antenna, sort of picture an ellipse around that antenna, right? A certain amount of space that it occupies. The bigger that space is, the bigger the bandwidth of the antenna. So if you have a ring-style antenna with small elements, it's going to be very narrow band. If you make the elements bigger, you can increase the bandwidth of the antenna. But, of course, at some point, you end up with an element that's impractical to build and to put on a tower. So there's a limit here to the bandwidth. This is the equation if you want to write that down and design your own antenna. I guess you can, well, I better change that before somebody does that. Okay. You can also do a half-wave spaced. And the reason half-wave spacing improves the bandwidth of the antenna is those two bays, when they're half-wave apart, they couple to each other, and it creates essentially a bigger volume, right? So think about the volume now isn't just the volume around a single ring-style element, but it's around these two elements that couple to each other. So the bandwidth is greater. The word here is, you know, it stretches the volume. So you use a half-wave when you want more bandwidth, and this is why that works. Now, for the N-1 over N, you can think about your elevation pattern here, and This is the formula that shows you where you will have the nulls in that pattern. So the nulls are at an angle where the inverse sine of, where k has to be an integer. So k is the number of elements in the antenna array. And this example that we run through here is for a four-element design. If you arrange them at a full wave space, you would have nulls at 14 and a half, 30, and 48.6 degrees. But critically, if you look on the left there, at 90 degrees, you've got about 10% of that energy that's going straight down. Okay, so this maybe isn't a problem if the antenna is way up there, but if you're at one of those sites where the tower's not very tall, or it's on the top of a building, that amount of energy could be a problem coming, you know, straight down off of the antenna. So, so what you do then is you adjust the bay spacing and solve this equation to drive that that null to occur at 90 degrees. And here's the solutions for a four bay. You can either put the elements at a quarter wave, right? Lambda over 4. You can put them at 2 lambda over 4, which is a half wave spacing, or you can put them at 3 lambda over 4. Now, when you do that, the antenna is getting longer and shorter, right? When you put them only a quarter wave apart, the antenna is much shorter, so therefore the gain of the antenna is less. So you're trading gain here in that case for reduced RFR. If you look at the gain as you go from quarter wave, half wave to three-quarter wave spacing, you can see the gain goes up as you move the elements further apart from each other. So that's why that n minus 1 over n spacing provides you with almost the gain of a full wave spaced antenna, but with RFR like a half wave spaced antenna. Does that make sense? So those are the three sort of standard flavors. There are other custom spacings that you can do for different applications, but the n minus 1 over n is the most efficient solution if you want to maximize gain and minimize downward radiation. So the way we achieve that n minus 1 spacing is something that we at Dielectric call the funky elbow design. Okay, so the trick here, we have to have a full wavelength of electrical distance between the elements, but only n minus 1 over n wavelengths of physical distance between the two, right? So the way you do that is you kind of snake the line up there using this collection of funky elbows, so to speak. But now every element in the antenna has to have two elbows with it, right? And that increases the number of parts, and that decreases the reliability of that antenna. It also increases the cost. When you talk about the cost of two elbows versus the cost of a single element for the antenna, it's not insignificant. So this is, there is a cost associated with doing the funky elbow, but doing the funky chicken is still free if you want to do that. Here's a summary of these different technologies, the pluses and minuses for the full wave, half wave, and n minus 1 over n antennas. Full wave gives you the smallest number of elements, gives you the lowest wind load because you've got the smallest number of elements. However, your bandwidth is limited, right? Remember we said the only thing you can do to increase bandwidth there is to make the element bigger. Downward radiation is a problem, right? So there is some energy that's going to come straight down out of the antenna. For a half wave, you can increase your bandwidth. You can even cover the entire FM band with a half wave spaced antenna. It is less sensitive to icing and other things that might move the antenna's performance around. There's no downward radiation at all. Everything coming down will cancel. You can handle more power. And the reason for that is, well, you've got more elements in the antenna, right? So you can handle some higher power there. Although the downside of having more elements is you've got to buy more elements. And your tower's got to hold up more elements. So the cost and the wind load both go up as well. N minus 1 over N, we said that's the most efficient way. No downward radiation at all. Bandwidth is not quite as good as a half-wave antenna, but you do have two elbows per element that you have to add into the cost. So more connections there, more places for potential failure in the future. So this is the state of things before Ringmaster was developed, right? So you had basically these three choices. So the Ringmaster, what we've done is we've created a way to use a combination of full wave spacing and half wave spacing in the same antenna. Okay, so if you look at these three pictures here on the left, you'll see a traditional full wave spacing, right? Two elements there, one wavelength apart. In the center, there's a traditional half wave spacing where you've got four elements, a half wave apart, and that's about 1.5 wavelengths long. Next, you see the Ringmaster, which is 1.5 wavelengths long, but you've got one pair of elements that are a half wave separated from each other, and the other pair are a full wave separated from each other. So you've got a gain profile that's similar to the half wave antenna here, but you've only got three elements, not four. And you know that's a significant reduction cost-wise, right? If you're only buying three instead of four. So for this architecture, it doesn't mean you have to use a particular type of bay from us. And these different bays, the QMSCH bay, those are all just different size bays from Dielectric. So the biggest is the Q, the smallest is the H bay. But you can use the Ringmaster configuration technique with any of those bays. So for example, you might have a DCRM6 center-fed antenna on the left there. We call that a 6 because there are 6 elements in there, but the gain is higher than a 6-bay would be, 6-bay half-wave would be, because we've got some spacing in there that's full-wave, so we make the antenna longer. We can do an N-fed with the bottom element being a full wavelength apart and the top ones being a half-wave apart. We could even do, if you needed a low RFR solution, do a collection of half-wave spaced pairs that are a full wave apart, if that makes sense. So that's what this DCRU8 represents. As you can imagine, there could be slide after slide after slide. And as a matter of fact, if you give me 8 bays, I can come up with 126 different ways that we can arrange these elements in full and half-wave spacing. If you use 16 bays, that balloons up to 32,766 options, right? We don't have that many models available. What we do is some of them don't make any sense at all, by the way, so we discard those, but we can choose whichever one of these makes best sense for you and your application. So here's an example. Someone calls and says, hey, I have about 90 feet available on my tower. What can you do? Well, we could do an 18-bay half-wave spaced on the left there. That's about 85 feet long. You'll see the feed system there. We've got basically three sections of 6 bays each, and you've got power dividers all the way back and feed line to feed those three different sections. Or we could do, if you've got 90 feet available, we could do a 12-bay Ringmaster. We could give you the same gain as that 18-bay half-wave spaced. But look at the feed system for that antenna. Much simpler, right? You've got 6 fewer bays, that's 33% fewer radiating elements. You've got a much simpler feed system, a much more reliable antenna, and you get the same kind of gain performance. If you said, well, that's great, Dave, but I need a low RFR solution. I need zero radiation coming straight down. Well, what we could do is a 12-bay Ringmaster, 80 feet long, so a little bit less gain. But here you'll notice all of those elements are arranged in half-wave space pairs, right? So that means that you'll have zero radiation straight down. So now there's three different options with that amount of space available, and depending on how you want to address that issue, you have opportunity to save complexity in the feed system, you've got opportunity to save cost of the antenna, and maintain the kind of performance that maybe you had before. We see this typically when someone's replacing an existing antenna, by the way. They call and they say, hey, I have an 18-bay half-wave, right? I need a replacement for that antenna. And we say, well, how would you like to only have to buy 12 bays instead, right? That's a pretty compelling argument. Here's an example of one. This is a 16-bay low RFR requirement that we recently installed. It's going to be operating with 13 stations between 90.9 and 106.7 into it. All the channels are under a 1.1 Vizwar all the way across the band. So you can see the broadband performance is definitely there. The RFR performance is there. This is an excellent application of the Ringmaster technology, and we probably, again, saved on the order of 33% in terms of the number of bays and a corresponding savings on the feed system for a similar antenna. So the Ringmaster allows us to use our existing ring elements to stretch that envelope of performance and provide a greater reliability, because the parts count goes down, right? The fewer parts, the fewer connections that you have, the better. Now, Ring 360, as you might guess after hearing about the Ringmaster, the Ring 360 is an omnidirectional antenna using the ring style element. A little bit of history lesson here. Again, going back to Dielectric's background and who we are, people think of us, first thing maybe you think of is pylon antennas, right? This term pylon antenna was coined by RCA. It just refers to a thin cylinder form factor where, it's a smaller antenna in terms of wind load and has fewer parts and a very high reliability kind of design. The downside of the pylon antenna is generally that's a narrow band device, right? So in the UHF TV world, this is a single channel, maybe a couple of channels wide. Natural bandwidth of a pylon, 1 or 2% in UHF. One way you can get more bandwidth is you can stack pylon antennas on top of each other, right? So this is something we do frequently where, we've got two different antennas that both want a top mount type of solution. And we figure out a way to structurally stack one antenna on top of the other one. In this case, there is a slight disadvantage for the guy on the bottom, because he's got to have a transmission line that feeds the top antenna run right up through his aperture here. So the way that we do that, because that transmission line will impact the circularity of the antenna, we trick the antenna. And the way you do that is you put some dummy transmission lines around the antenna. So where on the top drawing here, if you only had that one transmission line feeding the top antenna, that's the pattern you would get. If you add three more around, it smooths the circle back out, right? Because those effects cancel each other, and you end up still being able to have a nice circularity out of that antenna by using those dummy transmission lines. Now, I say that because, again, these techniques, we're going to borrow these techniques from the TV world, and we're going to bring them over into FM in the Ring 360. So, we always are pursuing this idea of an omnidirectional FM master antenna. And today, if you're looking at a top mount FM master antenna, you're talking about a panel antenna that looks something like that. It's got a support structure. It's got panels wrapped around that support structure. And your pattern is going to look something like maybe what you see there, right? That sort of triangular shape pattern. The good news is the circularity is pretty good. The HV ratio is pretty good. The downside is this is a pretty complicated and pretty expensive solution. Now, it would be great if we could use the ring style antenna as a master, right? Because it, remember thinking about parts count, right? If every panel up there has two inputs or four inputs, because it's not a DC-PC antenna yet, right? There's a lot of connectors. There's a lot of connections. There's a lot of opportunity there for your reliability for that antenna to not be great. It'd be great if we could use a ring-style antenna here, although usually because rings are side-mounted, they're only considered for an aux application, right? So people will have an antenna like a panel antenna on the top of the tower. They'll have a ring-style antenna on the side for an aux. And the downside of the mounting on the side is it's hard to get a nice circular pattern with a giant tower in the way, right? So this is a peek inside Dielectric and how it works, right? What we said was the industry needs a ring-style antenna that's not affected by a tower so we can top-mount it. in Dilbert speak, we had the pointy-haired boss come in and say, let's invent some sort of doohickey that everybody wants to buy. And then he goes over to engineering and says, the visionary leadership work is done. How long is your part going to take? So this is kind of what happened at Dielectric, and you can tell engineering put this presentation together because I think this is a little bit of a one-sided perspective on that interaction, but I'll let you take what you want from that. So you might have heard the term failure is not an option. Well, I tell you what, when we undertook this this effort, failure was a critical part of the process, okay? We had to try and try and try again, try to find a way that we could use a ring style element in a top mount configuration, right? So, you know, you can see here in the top left, we thought, well, we've used these dummy transmission lines before. What if those were like poles that were holding the antenna up, and then the ring style elements could be somehow suspended amidst those poles? Or what if we built a square structure and put the rings inside that? Could that be a solution? What if we had two towers and the rings were all between them, like you see here, right? What if we had like you see on the right, those two towers and everything was came off of the one side? These are all failed attempts, right? But the point is, none of this required us to build anything in hardware. This was all modeled in software. And some of these designs looked great electrically and failed mechanically. Some of these designs looked great mechanically but failed electrically. So, you know, we kind of pitted the electrical group and the mechanical group against each other at Dielectric and said, you know, let's solve this together, right? So nobody gets everything they want, but everybody has to have a solution that works. Finally, the light bulb came on. We had an idea that we think is going to work. So here's what I'll tell you that looks like. A little bit of background first. This ring style antenna, you can think of that. Those ring elements, they're just a truncated part of a continuous helix, right? So it doesn't really matter. You can rotate that element. As long as you rotate it about that z-axis, you can rotate it however you want. You see on the right side there, those elements are fed from, you know, the north, the west, the south, and the east, right? You can feed them anyway. As long as that z-axis aligns on those helical elements, the antenna will continue to perform. That was the light bulb that went off for us. And we said, okay, we've got to find a way to do that. Well, if we had a standard ring style antenna and we mounted it to a pole, this is the response you'll get there on the left. And if we had another one and we aimed it in the other direction, that's the response that you would get. Now, those look the same, and we thought, okay, doesn't really solve the problem, right? But what if we put one on top of the other one? And those two patterns would add where they needed to add and subtract where they needed to subtract. And the result would be what you see here across the band, where the patterns sort of meld together into this performance. All the way across the band, good circularity, good H to V ratio. Unfortunately, to build an antenna like this, you have to be a company that's familiar with, you know, putting pipes on top of each other, on top of a tower. And we are at Dielectric. We do have that capability, right? We talked about the pylon antennas. We talked about the stacked antennas. We're pulling that in from the mechanical side to solve this problem. Actually, the circularity here across the band is better than a three-around panel would be. So we actually landed on a top-mount solution that is simpler in terms of feed system, has a reduced parts count, and has better performance. Now, this is the one where the mechanical review becomes a little difficult here, right? Using this what we call offset mast design, you've got to balance the effect of having one mast on top of the other, but not directly on top now, right? You've got this sort of T-bar structure in the middle. So once our mechanical guys looked at that and ran through their process with it, the determination was that we needed to have this a dual pole here on the bottom, and We had to do some unique engineering in the crossbar to be able to do those types of joints, right? But we have that capability to do that. And if you look at the stresses here, this passes with flying colors. In fact, the wind area for this antenna, as compared to a panel antenna, is less, even when you don't count the structure that panel antenna is mounted to. So this is a winning solution in terms of the original goals that we set out to achieve, right? I mentioned those two flanges at the bottom there, so you will have to have a different tower top type of design. I'm going to go back to that for a second. You see there, that's just to give you some scale. 6 feet 2 inches is kind of the center-to-center dimension on those two poles. So the tower top is going to look a little different for a Ring 360, but I think you can see here a great example of our RF expertise and our mechanical expertise working together and using the knowledge that we've developed over the years to solve a problem in a unique way. So the Ring 360, it's a simple solution to a complex problem. It does perform better than a panel array would in terms of the pattern circularity, and the parts count is much less, so you'll have a simpler antenna, a more reliable antenna. Actually, we're saying about 10 times more reliable than a panel. So that's significant, right? Panel antennas, that's always the difficulty is someone says, oh, you know, somewhere in that panel something's not working, right? It's a connection somewhere. Well, you don't have that issue here with the Ring 360. And it says here, adaptable to other antenna configurations. So you could even use a Ring 360 with the Ringmaster technique if you wanted to, right? And you get the best of both of those worlds. So I wanted to mention that. And also wind load, which is important because that drives your tower modifications, right? 60% less wind load than a top mount panel style antenna. So this is a big win for us. And if you're looking for a top mount master antenna, you've got all the benefits. And all you need to do is have a unique tower top design for this. So that top plate, depending on the size of your tower, would need to be designed in conjunction with us. But Ring 360 would work great for that. All right, I know we covered a lot, and I don't know if there's time for any questions, but if I can take some, I will. Anybody? Go ahead.
Do you have any pictures of that last design in action?
I don't have a picture of a Ring 360 in action. That's at this point, I don't think we've built one to that point yet. So it's in the computer, so you saw the best I have there. But if anybody wants to buy one, I'd love to come and take a picture of it. That would be great. All right, that's all I have. Thank you very much.
So, right now we got time for a break. We'd like to reconvene around 11 o'clock. There's coffee and soda in the cooler there. So if you want to get up, stretch your legs a little bit, then we'll be right back here at 11.
If you'd start making your way to your seats so we can stay on time, that'd be appreciated. Thank you. If you would make your way to your seats, we're going to get going with our 11 o'clock program here. We got one busy guy here that's going to give us a little bit of advice on what's going on. Chris Tarr, also known as Doc Tarr, Group Director of Engineering for Magnum Media, family-owned Wisconsin-based radio group, also the chair of the FCC's State Emergency Communication Committee for Wisconsin, broadcaster for almost 40 years. Oh, you got a ways to catch up yet. Please welcome Wisconsin's very own Chris Tarr.
Well, hello. How are you? It's good to see so many friends and mentors and colleagues here today. I love coming to these because it's always a good chance to catch up with everybody. Today we're going to talk about the Velcom antenna. I got a lot of interest from this, from people who were asking how this worked. We had a tower that fell, and we'll kind of go through that in a minute. But before I get started, there's several people that were involved in this project. And it was a big one. So, it takes a village, and I got to remember to thank the following people who helped with this. Eric Bernstad, who's over there, John Zeckerly, Dave Magnum, Bob Gorgians, Cliff Groth, who's somewhere here, Stephen Lockwood and Tom Gorton from Hatfield and Dawson, Ed Trombley, John Simonson, just a few of the people who were involved with this. And you'll see, it was a pretty interesting project. Oh, down. Is that right? Where am I pointing this thing? It's not doing its down arrow. Nah, it's not doing it up here. Uh-oh. Is there an engineer here? I'm a radio guy. I don't deal with pictures. Hey, whoop. Well, sort of. Still not changing for me up here. Well, I can always point to you. We're off to a great start this morning. Well, anyway, while they're doing that, I see it changing. Well, yeah, that's good. It looks like you're trying to do a PowerPoint. Would you like some help? There we go. All right, so this all started with a localized kind of storm, sleet and wind event in Reedsburg. And the call came in from my coworker and boss, Dave Magnum. I'll never forget the call. He said, "Hey, Doc, are you sitting down?" And I said, "I am now. What's going on?" "Well, remember the tower we used to have in Reedsburg?" So that's how that conversation started. So here we are. We're off the air. And you'll see here in a second, there's the tower on the ground. And it's, can't get any more down on the ground than that. It was pretty interesting stuff. Not something you want to see if you're an engineer. That's kind of the you're having a bad day picture. So what we had to do was we had to put something on the air. We had to get something put together and up and running. So this is the diagram that I did for the long wire antenna. And what happened was I designed, kind of put this together, and you'll see in a moment, the guys putting it together, I kind of let everybody know, okay, here's what we're doing. Now, when you're filing an STA for a long wire antenna, the FCC loves these. They'll tell you, well, you can just draw something. Now, they like to really have something exact. So this is what I had put together to submit with the STA. And keeping in mind, as a lot of you know, with an STA for
a fallen tower or something like that, the FCC is right on it. You can just call them, and you know, they'll tell you to go ahead, and then as soon as you submit your stuff, they generally approve it immediately. So this was the temporary solution. On the top left corner, you can see that's the transmitter building, and this is kind of off in the backyard of the studio site. So this is a video of the tune-up and getting ready. You can see Bob's bald head there and John Zuckerly. Let's see if I can get this to play. There it goes. So that's tuning up the transmitter to match with the long wire. I tried to kind of do the math on that. They're kind of zooming around. There's Bob doing what he does best, which is supervising. And you can see the wire coming out. It comes to a standoff here on the utility pole. And then the long wire goes all the way across the backyard. And then we have a, where the satellite dishes are, you'll see in a minute, we have a pole that one of the dishes was on that's not really doing anything anymore. So we use that as an anchor on the other side. And obviously you want to tie something to these so that people don't guillotine themselves mowing the lawn or whatever. And there we go. That's the end of the long wire antenna right there. And you can see the insulator. And
there you have it, guys.
So essentially, they just went to the hardware store, picked up all this stuff. Pretty simple. this will be the second long wire that we've done. I did one for a different radio group a while back. They work. I mean, you know, you don't really have to get much into them to cover the city of license. I think we were running 75 watts on this, and it worked. It wasn't ideal. So then it was time to decide on what we were going to do. And this was actually probably the hardest part, was the debate on this. Obviously, there's a cost involved with whatever you do to replace it, the complexity of putting it together, availability of the materials. Also, what are you gonna do with the antenna structure? Do you have other plans? One of the things we did discuss was, well, what if we want to put up an auxiliary site for our Reedsburg FMs on it? That's always a possibility. And that would, if we didn't do a steel regular 300-foot conventional tower, we couldn't do that. So we kind of tossed things around and said, well, you know, is there someplace else we could do it if we wanted to?